Oh, hey, friends, this sale's for you. The DSW Friends and Family event is on. DSW VIP members get 25% off almost everything in stores and online for a limited time. Don't miss out. This only happens twice a year. Not a VIP? You're still family to us. Join for free to get in on the savings. Plus, VIPs always get free shipping on anything. Save on must-own shoes today when you shop the DSW Friends and Family event at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Ding dong, the tush push is dead, we think, according to sources, like Diana Orsini's sources. Welcome to the show, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. We're getting some drips and drabs out of the owners' meetings. It looks like Perloff's beloved Philadelphia Eagles are going to have to do without the tush push forever.
If I told you 5 years ago you were going to utter the sentence, ding dong, the tush push is dead, what would you have thought I was talking about?
You know, I don't know. Some kind of scandal involving Belichick. I have no idea. Anyway, looks like Philadelphia Eagles' secret weapon is going to be going the way of the dodo bird. At least that's what the sources say. We'll get more into that in a moment. Meanwhile, that's live footage of all of us celebrating. The OKC Thunder take a one-game lead over the Minnesota Timberwolves. That's the latest. Tonight, we've got the Pacers and the Knicks game one of the Eastern Conference Finals. Joe Vardon covers the NBA for The Athletic. He's been a friend of the show and in New York to cover this series, so came in studio to see us. Joe, thank you for coming on in. You made the walk over here. Now, I got to be honest, with some of the footage we're seeing and how crazy some of the Knicks fans have been, you got to watch your back when you're leaving the Garden. Try, you know, to keep your head on a swivel, because we saw Brian Windhorst get hit with a can the other day just trying to walk to his hotel.
You know, Brian is a dear friend. We're both from Akron, Ohio, and started together. He was sort of he was working the desk at the Akron Beacon Journal, and I was doing freelance for the Akron Beacon Journal 20-something years ago. And we've been all over the world together, because we both cover Team USA.
Yeah.
And I have seen him be, we've been in Manila, and people keep coming up to him like he's a player. I've been with him in the Middle East. I've been with him in Paris. So everybody else, like, the attention is all over the world. This is the first time I can remember anybody throwing anything at him.
A little over the top, Knicks fans. Let's dial it back.
Hold on. Wendy's a celebrity in Paris and all over the...
Oh, especially
more so than everyone else in the media, or
certainly more so than the media. But for the in Manila for the 23 World Cup, if you guys remember, that team was sort of the up and coming guys. Like Brunson was on it, and Hart was on it, Bridges was on it, and so you know you didn't have the A-listers, and so there is a massive mall next to the arena in Manila, and we would always go over there to get a pregame meal, and then we would walk back over for the game. And he would probably get stopped 10 to 15 times a trip.
Wow.
From people who either listened to that podcast or I guess maybe had seen him on TV just wanting pictures with Brian Windhorst.
Joe, let me ask you a question. On Pat McAfee's show, LeBron kind of threw Wendy under the bus and said, I thought that they had a long relationship going, as you said, back to Cleveland. Mm-hmm. What was
back
that all about? Yeah, everyone knows that Wendy's been covering him his whole career. Why do you think LeBron took a shot, kind of called him a weirdo?
I think that
could have been you too, by the way.
the gist of what was said there is just that there is this assumption that there is a personal relationship between those two, and what Brian would say is that there isn't, that it is strictly professional, and Brian would say that. So my initial read on some of that stuff was that LeBron was basically saying the same thing. You know, that I think that Brian's mom taught LeBron.
Yeah.
I believe that is true.
St. Vincent, St. Mary High School. Yeah.
And that's where he went to school as well. So, you know, I mean, Brian's written a few books, and like, I mean, I don't know if LeBron is one of those types that gets, that doesn't love it when people make money off of them that way. I don't know if that was the comment, but otherwise, yeah. I mean, it's just, I guess, just kind of like staking out what Brian has said too, which is just that there's, you know, they've just worked together.
Yeah. It's funny because like, and Windhorst said, you know, I don't ever want to think people think that I'm like riding his coattail.
Right.
Right. And, you know, to be fair, but everyone who started kind of with LeBron when he was young, even, you know, you were there too, but no one accuses you of like riding LeBron's coattails. You're also just there at the beginning, which is generally something that you value, right?
Well, also too, I do think in through the years, a lot of media members do become friends with the athletes they cover through the years. I mean, that's not unusual either. Like they could, I kind of actually thought they were friends. So maybe like friendly at least.
Yeah. Well, how do you feel about, you know, becoming friends with the guys you cover?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's maybe it's semantics, but when you spend this much time with these guys, especially, I will say, you know, just speaking about the USA stuff, when you're in a situation where you're only one of a couple people around that team, and you're with them every day, and especially if travel is involved, you just get to know them, and that, you know, that, I mean, to be, you know, get honest and personal about it, like that can be probably the toughest part of this job. Is you are around these people every day. And generally speaking, you're nice to each other. And you might even get to know them and like them. And then it is your job when they stink to tell them that they stink. And then you have to go back to the relationship you had the day before you told them that they stink. So that's where it gets awkward and difficult sometimes.
Yeah. Do you want to reveal any time where you ever really had a personal, like, oh gosh, I've got to air this person out because I got to do my job, but I know it's going to cost me in real life, like a potentially a personal relationship?
Well, I mean, going back to LeBron, I always appreciated him that he appreciated, at least in those days, those hard questions.
Sure.
There was one time where he was just being petty with the Cavs, and he unfollowed them on social media.
Oh, we remember Fit In, Fit Out. Is that this era?
It was all in that era. Okay. And at one time, like, it was after a game when he pulled this, and he had, you know, I think the Cavs had considered fining him. It was around the time that he was like laughing with Dwayne while the Heat were beating the Cavs by 25 at half. Like, just there was all kinds of nutso stuff going on, and so he unfollows the Cavs. People figure it out. And so post-game, I had to ask him about it. And he may have rolled his eyes at the time or whatever, but I always appreciated him that he was good with being checked so long as he thought that it was fair.
Right.
So that's, yeah, that's something I always appreciated.
Passive-aggressive LeBron James is it's something that maybe kind of feels like it has gone by the wayside. Joe Vardon is here with us in studio, covers the NBA for The Athletic. He's in town covering Knicks Pacers, which we'll get to. But because you're from Akron and you've had this relationship with LeBron for such a long time and Bronny and the whole family, you know, this is something I think that Perloff and I have disagreed on. Did LeBron know the Luka trade was coming? I don't think there's any way in you know where that he did not have a heads up, considering his agent, Chris Paul, and kind of bankrolling this agency. Excuse me, Rich Paul, Chris Paul. Rich Paul is also Anthony Davis's agent.
I could talk about this now. So that trade went down in the middle of the night between a Saturday night and a Sunday morning. I was on the phone with Rich by about 7:45 Akron time, Cleveland time. And the Mavericks, by the way, were actually in Cleveland when that happened, which was helpful to me as far as coverage goes. But so at 7:45 in the morning, like, Rich was insistent that LeBron did not know about this ahead of time, and he was explaining how he broke the news to LeBron, what was going on, what they were doing. You know, the family was at dinner here in New York, actually. I still think that is probably true that LeBron didn't quite know, just because I just think it really would have been too messy. You know, like, I don't think Davis would have wanted to be traded there. I thought maybe it might have been a good thing for Anthony, you know, as he could maybe get away from LeBron as LeBron goes towards retirement. But, you know, there's just, it's such a good trade for the Lakers, but at the same time, it would be so personal with the relationships there and even involving Rich. So I think it was probably better this way.
Did LeBron like the trade?
Yeah.
Okay, so if he would have signed off, but he was worried about Davis's feelings.
Yeah, I don't know how, like, LeBron can be shrewd like that. I mean, there was one time Dwayne Wade was on the Cavs, and they traded him at the deadline. So even if you're allegedly as close to LeBron as Dwayne was, if he thinks it's better off for his team that you're not on it, he's okay with that. I just don't know what I honestly, I can't, I can't talk about it because I don't know is the personal relationship between LeBron and AD, if that would have, how much that would have weighed on LeBron here.
Right.
Because they were close.
Yeah,
sure.
Absolutely. I mean, he wanted AD to leave the Pelicans. They set this up, you know, 2 years before AD hit free agency. It was a big deal. Joe Vardon is here with us in studio from The Athletic. Can Luka and LeBron win a title together?
Oh, time's getting short. I am fascinated to see if being paired with Luka extends LeBron's career. I didn't think that this past season, the 24-25 campaign, would be his last, but I'm wondering if this next one would have been, and maybe it still will be. But playing alongside a guy like Luka, I think, will reinvigorate him maybe one more time. And I also would just say, if you think back to the last mega partnership that Luka had with Kyrie in Dallas, when they were put together around the same time, it was about that trade deadline of 23, they weren't any good. Luka was really shy and really kind of didn't know how to play with Kyrie, and they didn't make the playoffs. And so then, you know, they have a summer together. They come back, obviously go all the way to the finals. And I do wonder about that with Luka and the Lakers. There was just a feeling out process, and also he was shell-shocked by the trade. He's shy by nature. But I think coming into this year, he will have a better understanding of what LeBron wants from him and how he can play to the best of his capability, the Luka level, alongside like other pretty big-name players. So I do expect them to be pretty
good. But if you look at this offseason, obviously, they expect a gigantic jump from Bronny next year to fill in. can they make a big move? I feel like their roster is just a little bit short, especially in the West now. Is there another star possibly coming to L.A.?
Well, I mean, you always consider the Lakers a possible destination. You know, this is going to be a somewhat boring free agency. But it could be a mega summer for stars getting traded. And, you know, the Lakers, of course, are always going to be star hungry. What they're learning, though, which what you see throughout the rest of the league, with the punitive nature of the salary cap, if you front load your roster with these stars, then the back end can be really rough.
Right.
And so they obviously need a big man. The primary reason why they lost in the first round was they didn't have the size to match up with Julius and Rudy, and it cost them. So they need to do that. I really like Austin Reeves. I like some of the pieces they put together. I had them going further than they went this year, but they need to get a little bigger.
Joe Vardon is here with us in studio. We're talking some NBA. He's in town to cover the Knicks and the Pacers. You mentioned could be a huge offseason for NBA trades.
Yeah.
So obviously Giannis, mm-hmm. who is meeting with the Bucks today.
As far as I know, yeah.
As far as we know, this is the big meeting, the meeting before the meeting, and then Kevin Durant's the other one. But for Giannis, if you're kind of reading tea leaves, does this happen again to the Lakers that he falls out of the sky? I don't even know how that would happen, but where do you think makes sense for Giannis?
I mean, you think about places like San Antonio, and you think about Houston. I keep throwing Oklahoma City out there. They are as close to the vest as any team in the NBA. I'm just saying, you know, they're riding high right now, and they also just have this outrageous treasure trove of draft capital. They have some young players they could throw in there as well. So you could have a warrior situation where, you know, the Thunder either win or get to the finals and then lose and then upgrade to a Giannis. Like, that could happen.
Like when Kevin Durant joined the Warriors.
That's exactly right. Brooklyn is a name that you hear. You know, they definitely want to get back into the star market. I think if depending on how this meeting goes today, does Giannis want this? You know, if the answer is yes, then I think 29 other teams have to make that call.
Yeah.
Can I be honest about one thing, though? Because I'm a Sixers fan, so I've been looking at these Giannis packages. Oklahoma City has a treasure trove of draft picks. A lot of them are top 5 or top 10 protected. Why do you want Oklahoma City's draft picks? I feel like if I'm the Bucks, I want to get into this year's draft, which is really strong. Mm-hmm. And so I would go
this year,
I feel like San Antonio is in the driver's seat. If they want to get, although they reportedly don't want to give it their due, why would you want these future picks for a team that's obviously going to be elite forever?
Yeah, I think it just depends on what your strategy is for a rebuild. Are you deciding that you're getting away from a franchise, like a face of the franchise type player, and it might take 5 years? Then you get as much draft capital as you can because it gives you the most flexibility.
But can Milwaukee do that? Just trade for a bunch of future first round picks and not get a player back to fill that void on that team?
Oh, no. I mean, I think you would get within reason whoever you wanted. Would it be Jalen Williams plus these? I mean, you know, the Thunder are trying to win a title right now, so let's not put him on the trade block, you know, for Giannis. But just when you start thinking about the machinations of how this works, they are going to get, if Giannis is available, they will get the exact mix that they're looking for of capital and young player or players.
Joe Varden's here with us in studio from The Athletic. Do you think we're going to hear from the Golden State Warriors this offseason? They made the Jimmy Butler trade. Obviously, Steph gets hurt in the playoffs, but they're trying to maximize the end of Steph's career. That's obvious. Are they a major player this offseason?
I think they want to be. I think they're really excited about the Steph and Jimmy pairing. You know, they value Draymond for just what he means to them spiritually, but he's also he's getting up there in age. And, you know, there comes a point where, you know, as production, you know, starts to diminish, can he keep it together, you know, emotionally?
Yeah, the answer is no. We all know that. 13 years of evidence of that. No dice.
But they know. They know they're nearing the end. You know, I mean, how much longer will Steve coach there? I think that that's a question as well. I think that's something for the Lakers and for Mike Dunleavy to just decide, is it worth getting rid of their future assets to make one more run?
All right, last one for me, Joe. You are NBA commissioner. You're mm-hmm. taking over for Adam Silver this offseason. 7 champions in 7 years. Yeah. We have real parity. Is this a good thing? Or are we sitting in a boardroom saying, hey, we might need to relax on the salary cap, the punitive salary cap you described earlier, and get a dynasty? Are they excited about this, or is it something to fix?
You caught me with, are they excited about this? With LeBron and Steph, I mean, gosh, LeBron's over 40 years old. Steph at least isn't that old yet. But these guys are leaving. They're timing out. And so the NBA needs to cast as wide of a net as it can and needs to introduce the average sports fan to its new stars in a way that maybe, the dynasties do not allow. So I think for the league, it's a good thing that Shea is where he is against Anthony Edwards. That's really good. And it's probably good for the league that the Knicks are in the conference finals this year. So I am on the side of parity is a good thing. It's reintroducing fans to the league at large instead of getting away on a couple players. To me, the salary cap thing is a little bit too it's just a little too confusing. Like, I feel like there's a way that we could, whether it's just institute more of a hard cap and just, you know, the rules are kind of just easier to follow. But parity, generally, I think is okay.
Yeah, you got to be Einstein to figure out that second apron. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Totally.
Okay, going to do something real quick with you. Joe Varden here with us in studio. Play a little music, and this is going to be 5 yes or no questions about LeBron James. Okay, Joe from Akron, been covering LeBron his entire career. 5 yes or no questions about LeBron James with Joe Varden. Here we go. Number 1, will LeBron own a team one day?
Yes.
Any idea what city he may favor? Would he get involved Seattle? Would he get involved Vegas, some of the expansion cities?
It's not going to be just him. It's going, like, he doesn't have the money for that.
Okay.
So it will be him plus the advisors and investors that he's already paired with who are located in Boston. So that doesn't mean the Celtics, but this will be part of his portfolio. He will own it.
Okay. And do you think he's going to try to run the team too?
I don't think that he will. I don't. I think that he probably would try to do that. I think he will find it to be less fulfilling than he imagines.
Yeah, when you're getting into the HR videos, you got to watch on, you know, like how to avoid phishing scams. It's not as fun. Okay, Joe Varden, five questions about LeBron James. Does he really spend $1 million a year on his body? Is that a real number?
I think so, just because of the equipment and probably figuring in some salary considerations as far as like who is helping him.
Okay. Do you think he will play with Bryce James, his younger son who's going to be playing at Arizona this year?
I would have said no. And I still tend to think that he will be out of the league before Bryce does that. The Bronny stuff to me turned out better than I thought. I think I was even in
when he was fighting with Stephen A. Smith on the court side.
No, but I just mean like I didn't think that Bronny, it had been years since Bronny was even the best player on his team. And I just questioned his readiness for the NBA. And he got better. Wow. You know, he had a good year in the G League after a while. It really started to score the ball. And then you could see it when he came back and played some games with the Lakers. Like, they had to play him in crunch time a little bit. And he held his own. Like, I don't think he's ready to be an impact player in the league, but it's gone better than I thought. For whatever Bronny was able to accomplish as a teenager, Bryce is behind that. So the only thing he has really going for him over his brother is he's taller.
Right.
But so I just in my limited, scouting abilities, like I would say Bryce isn't ready for this, but who knows?
Two more quick yes, no questions with Joe Varden, who's been covering LeBron James since he was in high school. Will LeBron play for another team besides the Lakers?
No.
No, this is it.
I have decided years ago that this is the hill I'm dying on.
Okay.
He's not going anywhere. Too happy living there. Savannah loves it there. They have a daughter who's going to school there. His son plays for the Lakers. Like, it's just...
Joe, to interrupt. He just got traded to the Cavs.
back in your hometown.
Yeah, that one didn't work out for you.
Gotta go.
Just kidding.
Okay, so that's a yes, and yes. Lifestyle is, you think, the number one reason.
Number one.
Okay, and last one for you is not a yes-no, but it's a question for you about LeBron James's career with Joe Varden. What's the biggest what if of LeBron's 20 plus years in the NBA? Putting you on the spot here.
Yeah. Is it, I'm sorry to mention this for my friend, Kyle Korver, but if Kyle makes the shot in the corner in game game four of the 17 finals. If that shot goes down and they even the series at 2-2, do they have a chance? That was the best Warriors team probably ever, and it was probably the best Cavs team too. So that's what I'll go with.
Biggest what if, a Kyle Korver 3. Uh-huh. I didn't think he'd be making an appearance on this show today, but that's the beauty of this show.
What if Draymond hadn't got kicked out before? You can what if both ways.
Yeah, if Draymond never kicks LeBron in the junk and gets suspended.
That's right.
Does LeBron
that series
ever get the redemption
over
in Cleveland? The full redemption?
Well, I mean, maybe just because then, does Durant join the Warriors at that point?
Yeah.
Maybe not. So maybe they get it the next year. We haven't had a repeater since the Warriors of 17-18.
Yep. Right.
So, would they have won every year after a second one? Who knows?
Joe, thank you for doing this. Have fun covering Knicks Pacers again. Head on a swivel.
No, we have a Yankees helmet if you want to wear a batter's helmet to walk out of the thing for flying garbage and stuff.
Absolutely.
Joe Varden, you can read him in The Athletic covering Knicks Pacers and obviously all the offseason, which is going to be really fun in the NBA. Thank you. Okay, coming up, a lot more to do, including we check in with who else? LeBron James's favorite NFL team, the Dallas Cowboys, next.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, hey, friends. This sale's for you. The DSW Friends and Family event is on. DSW VIP members get 25% off almost everything in stores and online for a limited time. Don't miss out. This only happens twice a year. Not a VIP? You're still family to us. Join for free to get in on the savings. Plus, VIPs always get free shipping on anything. Save on must-own shoes today when you shop the DSW Friends and Family event at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Welcome back, Maggie and Perloff. It is a day of mourning around here for the greatest play in NFL history. The tush push is going away reportedly later today.
Womp womp.
Eh.
Don't let the door hit you. with a good Lord split you, tush push.
Amen.
Honestly, did you really care about the tush push one way or the other?
Kinda.
Because did it drive people crazy? Yeah. I can't tell because I'm totally too inside as an Eagles fan.
Yeah, you're too biased. You're too close to the project. Here's what I don't like about how this went down. I don't like, it was clearly Commissioner Goodell doesn't like this play. The fact that they try to blame it first on health and safety, and that was obvious BS because they have no data to back it up, I thought was just really shady by the league. Shocker that the NFL is doing something shady. But this was like, it was a weird cover up to no crime. Like I health and safety is way too important for them to just be throwing this stuff around. So I thought that was just stupid. They don't like the play. So Goodell threw around
his
weight.
It's ugly.
And they got it. Sources are saying now it's going to get banned.
I think a lot of teams didn't like it too.
Yeah, because they couldn't stop it. Like there's not much more there, right?
Yeah, but it's just interesting. I'm curious when the rule gets written, and maybe Bogus, you have something on this. Are they going to say you can't push running backs, you can't push other players? Because I know your team, there are a bunch of plays where James Cook's got pushed in by linemen. That's really become a big thing in the NFL. And I always wonder, like, why are they blowing the whistle? You know, the guy's being carried about 10 yards downfield. So we'll be curious. You know, the NFL is the king of unintended consequences. Every rule change has about four different things I didn't see coming. So this one could be a big one because it might not just be about the tush push. We'll see how they try to word that. I love when the NFL gets something wrong. It's the best. Like, they're like, we're going to...
A lot of experience with that.
After the Saints-Rams travesty in the playoffs, they said, we're going to review pass interference the next year. And then it realized, well, pretty much pass interference on every play. I don't know what to do here.
It was a debacle. We'll see. I think a lot of things are going to get blamed on this. Like, if Philadelphia is a slow start, or if, you know, they don't win the Super Bowl, or they don't make it back to the Super Bowl, people are going to say, well, their secret sauce was missing. They didn't have the tush.
Well, I mean, how did they win the Super Bowl? They just, you know, buried Patrick Mahomes behind this awesome defense, half of which left in free agency. So, but a lot of
key
players.
NFC Championship game, though, the tush push was run so many times with Frankie Louvu jumping over the line of scrimmage, and he almost got kicked out of the game.
The Eagles would have happily ran it once. It was the Commanders who wanted to run it a bunch of times.
Goodbye, tush push. Good riddance.
Bogus, what a disgrace.
Is here with the latest. What's up?
It's worth pointing out that the Eagles did a lot of politicking to get votes to save the tush push. But both were told the league's competition committee and the players' health and safety committee have suggested banning the tush push, which is apparently fueling this decision today among owners. And the Packers' proposal does ban you doing anything to help the runner except blocking for him. You can't push, you can't
pull. Okay, so and when they pass it, that has to have that. They can't say, well, we're going to pass part of this law.
No. They're passing a piece of paper that has the... They're accepting word for word what was given.
Oh, that's going to be tricky. What's a push, what's a pull? There are going to be some controversial calls.
Well, obviously, you know how this sets up like a movie, right? This would be the Green Bay Packers playing the Eagles in some kind of big playoff game. And somebody from the Packers gets pushed into the end zone and they flag it.
Divisional game in the snow.
And they lose, and Packers lose, despite them being the ones who introduced this change to begin with. That's how this thing gets poetic justice for the Eagles.
I remember months ago I said that like the Eagles fans will remember the Packers were doing this, and Pearl said, no way. I still think that when the Eagles play the Packers this year, Eagles fans will definitely have signs. They will definitely remind the Packers that this happened.
That's at the link this year?
I think it is. I think I looked it up.
I mean, I'm not sure exactly why I said no way, but the Eagles fans hate everybody, so they're going to hate the Packers equally. But yes, did the Lions come in and say we like this banning the tush push too?
Sean McDermott
was it
from the Bills?
Sean McDermott. I know Sean McVay was a big part of this too.
No, the Lions wanted the playoff seating.
Okay, right. But I know Sean McVay is big on the competition committee. And I think the Eagles and the Rams could easily play in the NFC title game. I think the Packers have bigger problems, to be totally honest with you. You got to protect Jordan Love. Anyway, that's Eagles trash talk right there.
We are expecting a no from owners today for changing how playoff teams are seeded, but a yes for another extension for Commissioner Roger Goodell.
Go Birds.
Outside these meetings, Dak Prescott's participating in Cowboy OTAs right now, 6 months after his hamstring tore off the bone. Dak, though, is not cleared yet for contact. It's a relatively new term for me, but it's been thrown at Shea Gilgeous-Alexander for a while now. He's apparently being called by the kids a free throw merchant, seeking contact instead of trying to score in game one of the Western Conference Finals last night. SGA drew 13 fouls, although one of them was challenged and overturned. Here's T-Wolves head coach Chris Finch.
There was a lot of frustration out there, but we talked about that before the series started. And, you know, we have to be able to kind of put that aside and get on with the next play mentality.
SGA hit 11 of 14 free throws, hit 10 shots from the field, 31 points in the Thunder's 114-88 runaway. OKC outscoring Minnesota by 30 in the second half last night.
Can you imagine if it's a Knicks-Thunder finals, how much merchanting is going to go on? It's going to be like the Merchant of Venice. The foul merchant Brunson versus the foul merchant Gilgeous Alexander.
Are you still talking over there from Cancun, brother?
There's a tariff joke that I'm just not smart enough to make there about merchants, but something.
Well, and it's going to be boring.
Canadian. He is Canadian.
So
Shea gets 1.5 free throws for every two that Brunson gets.
Yeah. I mean,
there's a cap on how many.
The style
did
play
you guys
was a
conversion
little,
rate, too.
It's a little choppy. He gets you on his back, and the thing about him is he's so good. He draws a foul, and then he can hit the shot. The guy's balance is incredible.
I just watched a six-minute cut-up of all 13 fouls.
So did I.
I don't know that many of them were wrong.
Thank you.
Like the one that
one
is,
was bad.
The one that gets overturned because he just fell. And then there's one where he leans into, I think, Mike Conley at the left elbow and falls away. That's not a foul.
Right. How about when Randall?
Otherwise, those are all fouls.
What about when Caruso flopped on that charge on Randall? That was a
bad
big
call.
Play.
Yeah, I didn't like that call either.
Yeah.
No, yeah, I agreed. I watched the compilation. And I was like, maybe on the Edwards shot, the first one, we said, okay, maybe he did kind of create that contract. But every other one, I think he's getting fouled.
That's not what merchanting is, though. That's not saying the calls are bad. He's putting himself in a position intentionally to get fouled.
Yeah, that's a good play.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's smart basketball.
Yeah, smart basketball. It's completely an unappealing product. I mean, if that's foul merchanting, it doesn't mean it's bad calls. It just means you're putting yourself in a position because you want to get fouled.
Yeah,
it's not easy to do. You have to be a great player.
Right, and I don't think it's a negative, and I don't think he's getting a beneficial whistle, at least last night.
No, but that's my point. It's not about a beneficial whistle. Yeah, they're fouling him, but he's playing an intentionally game to get into the paint and draw them.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought process, because I feel like there are a lot of people who feel like he's not getting fouled. Like, these are touch fouls. I saw Bill Simmons tweet, like, these touch fouls got to stop, and I'm like, I think these are fouls. Like,
well, I bet you.
But there's a juxtaposition because the Thunder defenders play so physical that it's like, well, how are they getting away with this? And then you touch him, there's a foul. I think the problem is they're playing.
But it's been pretty even.
Yeah, and they're also playing against players. Like, Anthony Edwards does not do that. Like,
the first half was not even, by the way. It started out like 14-1 or something.
Yeah, Shea's all of his points were essentially at the free throw line.
That's fine, but I guess you're going to, like, kill a guy for taking advantage of, you know, a skill set that he has.
Yes.
It's not nearly as bad as what Harden did. It didn't feel like
it. It's absolutely as bad. He's exactly like Harden. And he's exactly like Luka, too. The three of them. I'm going to kill him in the sense that, yes, it's unentertaining basketball.
I don't know. I didn't felt like this game had no flow.
Oh, I thought this game was.
First half was rough.
I mean, first of all, where did that Isaiah Hartenstein teardrop come from? He's carrying the team for half the game.
So the other part, too, is, you know, Anthony Edwards getting his fourth foul pretty early. And I thought that I thought Chris Finch kept him on the bench a little too long. I mean, it was a close game, still with 7 minutes. It was a winnable game. It was still a game it was in the balance with 7.5 minutes left to go. I think that's when he came back in the fourth quarter. I mean, I know he's got four fouls, but.
He also pulled him a little quick, too. I know it's game one, but I was surprised when he called off the dogs.
How are you going to win when you're DiVincenzo and all the bench guys are 1-for-50 from three? Like, they couldn't hit a shot.
Yeah, that's what
you have to hope changes, right? That they hit their threes.
I agree, because I think.
They were getting looks, though. They were just not going down.
Yeah, I don't think that OKC, like, I know Shea said they're going to make adjustments. I don't think they're making any adjustments defensively. I think they're going to keep saying, we're going to close off the paint and make these other guys make threes. Usually they're a little better than last night. I don't know if they'll get better, but they're definitely going to dare Naz Reid and DiVincenzo to beat them from outside.
Randall hits some shots. His confidence.
But those other guys can't shoot right now.
Bogues, what else?
SGA, by the way, however he got there, is likely to be the MVP this season. That announcement finally comes tonight ahead of Knicks-Pacers game one. Caitlin Clark, the Fever, erased the late 89-80 hole, but still lost it home to Atlanta last night, 91-90. Clark, 27 points and 11 assists. Asia Wilson scored 22. Jewel Lloyd had 20 as the Aces rolled through Connecticut for their first win of the season 87-62. To baseball, the Cardinals trying to say,
get the f*** out of here, Detroit!
But Riley Green had other ideas.
The pitch is swinging, line drive, base hit into right center field. This one's heading up the gap all the way to the wall. McKinstry around second, heading to third. Joey Cora waving that arm. McKinstry's helmet flies off. He will score standing up. Have a night, Riley Green. RBI double to the gap in right center. The Tigers take a 5-4 lead in the ninth.
That's Dan Dickerson on Tigers Radio. Detroit winning 5-4, courtesy of that Green RBI double top nine. It's their majors leading 32nd victory. And I believe everyone remembers the dude who fell over the right field fence and onto the field in Pittsburgh. He's only 20 years old, so a friend is now facing two third-degree misdemeanors for allegedly providing the beers that fueled that accident. I think his first name is pronounced Kavin Markwood. He is recovering well now from skull, rib, and lung injuries.
So he's going to survive. I actually didn't know that.
He's going to survive. It sounds like it's not going to be an easy recovery, but he's up and moving again and everything like that now. And his buddy is in some trouble here for buying him beers.
Oh, man. That was just a terrible story all the way around. Could have been obviously terrifying. Much worse if he was not going to pull through, but very, very glad that he's going to be okay. I got something for you guys. Thank you, Bogish. Coming up next, a story that goes beyond sports, but one that I guarantee you are going to have a strong opinion about. 7P. Welcome back to the Megan Perloff Show. Covered a lot of ground today. The tush push looks like it's going away permanently, according to sources at the owners' meetings. Tush push is not being... it's going to be outlawed. Competition Committee, Health and Safety Committee, both saying goodbye tush push, and we are here for it, mostly because it helps Perloff's team. I do want to get to another story, though. It has nothing to do with sports, but I think something that you'll have very strong opinions about. Okay, Manny. Obviously, we were saddened to hear the news that George Wendt had passed away. Norm from Cheers, the Superfans, which we just played a clip from the Superfans recently when the new Pope was elected. Elected? Yeah. And he's obviously from Chicago. So we played the Superfans, and George Wendt was incredible on Cheers. What an amazing sitcom. And I actually got this question from Chris Thomas, who I was on with last night from 92.9 The Game in Atlanta. The greatest sitcom sidekick.
This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe, without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything, to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you, from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
Of all time.
Hey, you there, man?
Hey, Norm!
Hey, ain't beer with you.
How's life treating you, Norm?
I got just ran over its dog.
Who is the greatest sitcom sidekick of all time? Because I've got mine, and I have a very strong opinion about this.
All right, get us started.
It's Costanza. It's got to be George Costanza. And I think a little bit like Norm, George Wendt, the actor, really didn't have another notable role. He had the Superfans, which was a SNL sketch, but he was so known for being Norm, it almost muddied the water for him to just be a regular actor. That didn't happen to Woody Harrelson. It didn't happen to Rhea Perlman. It didn't happen to a lot of Frasier. Well, Frasier ended up having a spinoff, but whatever. Same with Costanza. He couldn't get another big role because people saw him and couldn't see anything else but George.
Yeah, I just actually rewatched Shallow Hal, Don't Ask Why, and Costanza had an amazing role in that. Remember, he had a tail at the end of the movie? Anyway, but let me ask you a question. Are you sure he's a sidekick? Because I felt like there were four primary players in Seinfeld that were close to equal.
No, I mean, it's Jerry. It's called Seinfeld. It was Jerry was the main character.
I mean, I've heard them talk about it. They viewed it as like a four-person show. Is Elaine a sidekick?
Like an ensemble cast, basically.
Yeah, I think that's an ensemble. See, Norm was a sidekick. That would be
Ted Danson?
That would be my counter.
I think I agree with Perloff. Because my first thought was Carlton. But I don't know if I'd call him
Fresh
a sidekick.
Ooh, yeah, as the show went on, I don't know if he was a sidekick anymore.
Because a real sidekick to me is like Jazz from The Fresh Prince. He's a sidekick. Well, he's someone who's not in every episode, but he's only there with Will.
Right.
Like, it'd almost be someone who's like either, like, you know, like the guy from Cheers, or someone who's like not necessarily the main part of the
show.
Yeah,
but you can't be Jazz from Fresh Prince because he's not even in the opening credits. It's got to be someone who, and I think it's the opposite. It has to be someone who's a regular on the show.
Jazz was awesome in the Fresh Prince. Let's just, he always delivered.
Like, Carlton's a great
driest sense of humor of any DJ in the history of the world. But
you
anyway.
Don't know what the hell you're doing?
So Charlie from It's Always Sunny is out? Because that was
That was my first choice, but then again, he's definitely a primary.
Right.
Yeah, it's like, and he's the same as Cassandra.
And there's no way to separate the Friends cast. They're all
okay,
equal.
Well, maybe some of your favorite shows this doesn't apply. But I would say Dwight Schrute would be another one.
That's a good one.
Also,
I would go sidekick with him for sure.
But Steve Carell was the lead, and then Dwight Schrute felt like his sidekick.
Yeah. Well, also too, like Seinfeld was the lead, and he was the straight man. Like it wasn't really about Jerry. It was really four plots. Interesting. What are some other strong names? Dwight Schrute's a good one. I immediately went. Sonny is my favorite all time. Favorite all time sitcom, but they don't really have sidekicks.
Barney Fife, if you want to go back,
yes,
you know, was definitely a big one with the Andy Griffith Show.
That would have been Bilotti's suggestion if he was
definitely
still
Bilotti. It's like there's no way he watched that first run, but he loved it.
Ted Knight and Mary Tyler Moore.
Ted Knight would be a great one.
But Dan Patrick, huge Ted Knight fan,
and I'm surprised EJ didn't bring up like Robin on the Batman TV show.
I think
show.
You're an idiot.
Oh, I don't know if I call that a sitcom though. I guess it kind of was.
Felt like more of a kid show.
The Adam West like pow.
Yeah,
Blam.
That was not a situational comedy.
Yeah, I don't think that's. Yeah, it has some elements. That's a great question. That should be a poll question.
Ethel Mertz.
Yeah, I thought about
from
Ethel.
I Love Lucy.
I thought about Wheezy.
Wheezy also.
But then now we get into the thing of our wives sidekicks.
Like, it was Wheezy
back
that great?
In that day they were.
Why Wheezy?
Hopefully we've come a little bit further, but back then they were.
What did Wheezy do though?
Ethel, I thought three other
characters ahead of Wheezy.
Wait, no, but Ethel is like the black version of Wheezy. Or no, vice versa. Wheezy's the black version of Ethel. Like, they literally came from that show.
There were funnier characters on that show though.
I agree with that. I can't remember the maid's name, but she
was the norm of the show. Yeah. She had all the punchlines.
I'm a big fan of Jacob Hill in Abbott Elementary, the only white guy on that show. I think he's very funny.
That guy is funny.
I'm seeing here Patrick from SpongeBob SquarePants.
Oh, Elite. I got you Kimmy Gibbler from Full House. That's a good
That's
one.
A good
the
one
neighbor.
Too. Is that a sitcom? Or a kid
Full
show?
House?
Or a kid show.
No, Full House is a sitcom.
Oh, we're doing this again. I'm going to say Sean from Boy Meets World is a sitcom.
Yeah, he's on this list too.
Yeah, definitely.
The neighbor from Doogie Howser. Can I say his name?
I don't know what his name is.
Why is his name like foreboding?
Is Doogie Howser a sitcom?
Yes.
No, they have.
Oh, they might not have had a laugh track.
No, they weren't filmed in front. That was a show.
I'm mixing characters. The friend from Doogie Howser might have a suggestion, but there's a guy on the Kirk Cameron show, his buddy.
Growing Pains. Yeah, he had a friend.
Yeah.
How about Zach?
His name was, are you going to make me say, just say it. It's not bad.
That's his boner.
His name's Ryder Strong.
That's fine.
It's his name, dude.
Ryder Strong is the guy from Boy Meets World.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Who are you
the
talking?
Friend boner, from yeah. Growing Pains is a boner.
Oh, right,
that's
right.
Fine.
What about What about show, Dustin right? Diamond and Saved by the Bell? You guys should go there.
Screech?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But aren't they all character? The same? Yeah, it's the thing.
That's a tough one.
I don't think he's, the guy from the Max is a sidekick.
Like, again, like, I think you know what a sidekick, I think it's one of the things you know when you see it. Like, Leon from Curb is a sidekick.
The guy from Tool Time, the neighbor.
Yeah,
he's a sidekick.
I don't think he counts because we never saw him.
That was the guy over the fence.
Yeah.
Right?
No, Al Wilson. Borland. You saw Al Borland, not Wilson. Al Borland. He's the sidekick to Tim Allen.
I thought you meant the guy who you only saw half. Half his head.
Cole from Martin. He's a sidekick.
I think George,
Cole and Tommy.
I think George Wendt definitely would. He's the reason we're having this conversation. And again, thank you to Chris from 92 from the game in Atlanta who gave us this idea because he asked me last night who's the best sitcom sidekick.
What were you doing on Atlanta radio last night? What was the
hanging
interview
out,
about?
Chilling.
Did you call in on your own?
Fly down there?
Yeah, I called Chris. Was like, hey, what are you doing around 7:20 Eastern time?
What
Chris
was the first question
92.9 The Game. We're just chit-chatting about sports.
He used to work here, Chris Thomas.
He was great.
Oh, that's why he follows me.
Yeah.
I was like, why is this random Atlanta producer follow me? Now I know why.
Chris
seems really cool.
And obviously, we love Carl Dukes.
We love
Mike, so we're big fans of The Game.
Put him up.
Mm-hmm.
Coming to the wedding.
Yes. Carl's the man.
Yeah. Had to make sure I got an invite for him.
That's awesome. Oh, are we going to do EJ's wedding on the air?
You're going to get married on the air?
Oh, no.
Are we allowed to talk about it on the air?
Yeah, sure.
The invite list?
Oh, the invite list. Yeah.
Careful.
It'll be like Varden.
Sorry,
it'll be,
Manny.
I'll be like Varden. It'll be like, I'll answer some questions. Some questions I won't know.
Varden was doing it. So tell me this about LeBron. That's a great question, Maggie. You know, just stalling for time to get out of that difficult LeBron because he knows where the bodies are buried in Akron.
I thought he answered all the LeBron questions very well. LeBron wants to own a team, wants to run a team. You think he's going to be any good at that?
Well, he hemmed and hawed a lot. He's like, he'll run it for a week and then decide this is no fun.
Possible. Thank you, DJ Stewart. Thank you to Manny Rodriguez, Andrew Bogish, Andrew Kaplan, Joe Varden, who came in to talk with us about all things LeBron James and more. And, of course, the Widows.